Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's dramatic program, Strange Gods, is written by Erwin Gonshack and is the first in a series entitled Freedom and Responsibility. The series centers in episodes taken from the career of Moses and the Israelites.
Good, good.
Thank you, Ptah.
Apis, the bull god, the god of fertility and strength. Another superb creation for the pantheon of gods.
The bull I used as a model was one of the finest animals in Egypt. Animals are scarce in the realm, you know. But when I told the owner my purpose, he very gladly obliged.
Indeed he did. Let the clod resist and he'd know the sting of the lash. But for you, my boy, let a few more years pass, then perhaps you'll become a master craftsman to the Pharaoh like myself.
I would like that very much.
Should it please the Ra of Ramses, the beloved of Amon?
Of course, Ptah.
Too bad you're an Israelite.
Yes.
It makes it harder.
I know.
Still, talent is recognized in Egypt. Good craftsmen are needed. The gods of the spirit world must be enshrined in stone. The gods revel in this type of adoration, and we can more readily persuade them to do our bidding. But everything must be perfect when dealing with the gods. Their form, the formulas, the rhythm of the sacred dances, the gestures, or else the darkness of the underworld will engulf us. Ah, but you must be familiar with the antics of the gods, their perversity, their venality, their cruelty. The Israelites no doubt have their gods.
Yes.
But weak, ineffectual gods, I assume. Or else why would Egypt have all the power, the splendor, the wealth, whereas your people, the Israelites, are held in bondage and are forced to grovel at our feet?
Oh, my thoughts are rarely of the God of Israel.
And rightly so. You're a wise boy, Manasseh. But don't concern yourself with the past. Rejoice in the knowledge that your work pleases the Ra of Ramses, the beloved of Amon. In this temple of Osiris, you are numbered among his finest workers.
You are very generous, Ptah. I like very much to...
We interrupt this program for a news bulletin. Prime Minister Fidel Castro demanded today that the United States give up its naval base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. We return you to the program now in progress.
Found in the land of the Pharaoh. Other than my work, of course. Your hands have a special touch, Manasseh. You are a creator of gods.
We are of the tribe of Ephraim, and at the time of this narrative, my people lived in Goshen, in the marshy delta of the Nile. We had come to Egypt many generations before, during the days of Joseph. We came to Egypt as keeper of flocks and as free men. But then a pharaoh arose who did not know of Joseph and his good deeds for the people of the Nile. This pharaoh forced us into servitude, and we became a builder of temples and mausoleums for the unbounded vanity of the Egyptian lord. My betrothed, Manasseh, worked in one of these temples, 3 days' journey from our sector, at Pihahiros, near Lake Timsa. I would wait for him on the edge of the desert when I knew he was expected home. And even though my love for him was deep and pure, often I greeted him with sighs and heavy heart.
No smile for me, my turtle dove, after all these weeks of absence.
You know I am pleased to see you, Manasseh.
So why, may I ask, the frown? As if I didn't know already.
Of course you know, and still you do nothing about it.
Oh, what shall I do? Working in stone is my trade. I wish to do nothing else.
Working with strange gods?
They're not strange to me. They come out of this hand you now hold, and the other hand. and this heart that beats in my chest. Listen to it. Manasseh is a creator of marvelous sculpture. Manasseh can take an unhewn stone and turn it into a fanciful figure of the imagination.
They are vile and hateful idols. They're an abomination to our God.
Oh, what God?
The God of our fathers, the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. The one God, the only God, the merciful one.
This God doesn't appear to be concerned with us anymore. I don't see him about.
He is invisible, but he is everywhere.
Is he in Goshen?
Everywhere.
Then why are we still in bondage? Why doesn't he help us?
First, we must listen. We must hear him. We must open our hearts to him.
All right. Until then, I will continue my trade. I see nothing wrong with it. In fact, it may be the means by which we liberate ourselves.
The people of Israel?
No, my beautiful one. You and I.
What do you mean?
Ptah speaks highly of me. One day he says I will be a master craftsman in the service of Ra of Ramses.
Oh, how disgusting.
Why? What right have you to say that? What do you know? When have you ever come over to the temple to see the work I'm doing?
Never.
But it is the work of your betrothed, your love, your husband-to-be. It is part of me, my heart and my soul. Don't you wish to know me? To really know me?
I can't go.
What are you afraid of?
It's not a matter of being afraid. I've always been taught not to bow down to idols.
I didn't say to bow down. I just say come out to the temple and see my work. See my creations, which hold sway over the Egyptians.
I can't.
My beloved must be afraid. See? Your hands tremble.
I am not afraid. The desert air grows cold.
All right, my sweetheart. Have it any way you wish.
Being afraid of the idols that kept me away from the temple. Certainly it was something else, something more than that. But exactly what, I didn't know. So I decided to speak to a holy man who had come recently to our community and ask his guidance. Although this prophet had come to us from the desert lands, it was said that he had great familiarity with the numerous gods of Egypt. His name was Moses, and one day I made a point of seeking him out.
Yes, young lady.
There is a question, Moses.
And what is this question?
I do not wish to offend...
You will not.
And I do not wish to arouse your anger.
It is not easily aroused.
These gods of Egypt...
What of them?
My betrothed is a maker of idols. In the temple, I mean. With his hands, I mean.
Does he believe in these idols?
No. No. He says this is only his trade.
Continue.
We often quarrel about his work. But he says if I go to the Egyptian temple and see what he is doing, the strange beauty of his creations, I will feel differently about it.
But you have not gone.
No. But I'm not afraid. It's a feeling hard to explain.
The idols, as you know, are merely made of stone and wood. They have no power. They are nothing.
So then there is really nothing to fear from them?
No, young lady. There is much to fear from them, for what they represent. For sanctioned by this baseless idolatry of animal worship is an abominable system of social and moral wrongs. The worship of these idols is the beginning and cause of every evil. The worshippers sink to the level of beasts and are treated as such by the kings. They that sacrifice men kiss calves.
Yes. Yes. I must not go to these idols. I must not look upon them.
If only it were as easy as that to protect ourselves from their lure. Many of our people who have been made slaves in the land of idolaters have become idolaters themselves. My young friend, I think the question you have brought to me is how to protect yourself from their seductive grasp. Is this not so? Is this not so?
So your Rebecca will not come to the temple of the Egyptian gods?
No, Ptah, not yet. But I hope in time to
tell her to bring her god of Israel with her. We could place it next to Hathor the cow, or Anubis the jackal, or the serpent Apepi.
The god of Israel is invisible.
Can't be seen.
No.
Surely he'd put us stonecutters out of business.
Was someone expected?
Well, probably a priest of Osiris, or
Somanasa, I am here.
Rebecca!
Show me your temple and your gods.
But you said you wouldn't come.
I am here. There is nothing more to say. You are Ptah?
Yes, my dear lady. And Rebecca, my child, you've come at an excellent time. For shortly, the temple priestess will...
Ptah, please.
Oh, but Manasseh, let your beloved see all. Or else how will the dear child learn of the esoteric tastes of the gods? After the priestess, then the special rites to ward off the spirit of the dead, the demons, scorpions, serpents, wild beasts, fire, rain, injury, sickness, and enemies. Then you'll want to see the rites to ensure the dying man happiness beyond the grave.
Fine,
and then...
I wish to see everything.
Rebecca.
No, Manasseh, I am here, and I will see it all.
Of course, of course. Now, our gods play an important role as teachers of the magical arts to men. You would be wise to become one of their students.
These gods are teachers of men?
Certainly. How else could we survive against the evil spirits of the netherworld?
And for this teaching, do the gods ask anything in return?
Devotion, care, the fixed formulas, the fixed rhythms, the fixed gestures, the rituals properly applied, and other payment of a sort.
Other payments? What kind?
Don't worry your pretty head over that. Gods of terror can sometimes only be won over by terrible means. But come, there's much to be seen. The awesome rites to the bull god, the jackal god, the snake god, the lion god, the monkey god, the crocodile god.
So I saw that day the savage and lustful deities of Egypt, who required of their worshippers every abomination which the Lord hates. Why I had come, I could not definitely say. What I saw, I could not describe. Evil, darkness, depravity. Even these terms are not adequate. Yet what was the fascination of these gods which so enthralled their worshippers? I ran out into the desert sands, shaking with fright, pursued by every fear that bedevils man.
Rebecca, Rebecca.
Oh, Manasseh, protect me, oh, protect me.
Don't worry, my love. It is over and past. I'm sorry you came when you did. I wanted you to come when the temple was empty. When you could have just seen the work I have done. I infuse my whole soul into the statues of stone so they come to life. The rest means nothing to me. I ignore the rites of the priests. I close my eyes to them.
Promise, promise, never let me return to this hideous place.
Oh, you needn't ever again. Shut your eyes, dear, and forget what you have seen.
Yes. We'll be married soon. I'll think only of our life together.
My dear one, you will never regret it. A great future lies ahead. My work will open up for us the luxury and comfort of the palaces of Thebes and Memphis and Sais. Except for these temple rites, let us be like the Egyptians in their manner of living. Then happiness will be ours.
Soon we moved out of Goshen, and Manasseh and I took on the garb and appearance of the Egyptian. Manasseh became an important artist for the Pharaoh, and life, as my husband had promised, became very pleasant for us. Still, from time to time, I was drawn again to my people in Goshen, and I would go there and visit among them. Conditions for them were becoming worse. The vanity and desires of the Pharaoh knew no bounds. Egypt was becoming an iron furnace for the Israelites.
and the prophet Moses was proposing to lead them out of their adversity.
My people, we must prepare to leave this land of abomination. We must break the bonds of our chains. The God of Abraham is with us. It is we who have lost him. It is we who have followed false gods. To worship our God is to do what God commands. And his commandment is to bring about justice and mercy, to return to the land of our fathers, and make a nation which will be a light unto the world.
Yes, Rebecca, I agree it is hard for the Israelites in Egypt. But there are advantages. The succulent flesh pots, beer, bread, shelter.
But the spirit is dead.
Oh. For most people, it was never alive. Feed their bellies and people are happy. They want no more.
What of the words of Moses, of the God of our fathers, of the escape from bondage?
The people will not leave their comforts, meager as they are.
You speak of us, Manasseh?
Oh, for us, there is no question. We are now Egyptians. We are benefiting from the high culture and civilization of Egypt.
Sometimes, my husband, I wake up trembling with fear, thinking I am back in the temple of the animal gods.
Oh, there, there. Learn to close your mind to such thoughts. Just think, my dear, one day, soon, I may even replace Ptah as master craftsman to the Pharaoh, and then think of the additional comfort and joys awaiting us, and what this will mean for our son and his future. Never would I dream of returning to the rude tents of our forefathers.
Manasseh?
Ptah! Come in, come in. What do we owe the pleasure of this visit?
Official business.
Of course, Ptah, of course. We are always on official business. Every moment of our life we devote to the pleasure of Ra of Ramses and the gods of the temple. But for old friends. Rebecca, a glass of wine for Ptah. A glass of wine for an unexpected but most welcome guest.
I must decline.
Oh, perhaps you would prefer...
It has come to the attention of the gods of the temple that a first son has been born to you.
Oh, certainly. I told you. Don't you remember? I told you when the boy was born. There was no secret about it. He is the great joy of our life.
You were an Israelite.
What's wrong with you, anyway? I was an Israelite, you mean? But that's the past. I'm an Egyptian now.
Apis the bull requires confirmation of this.
What do you want me to do? I live in the Egyptian quarters. I dress like an Egyptian. I eat like an Egyptian. I go to the temple with the Egyptians. What else do you want?
Apis the bull wants your son.
As a priest in the temple?
As a sacrifice.
Ptah, what are you saying?
Apis the bull...
What kind of talk is this? Don't speak to me of Apis the bull.
I speak merely as his servant.
I made this Apis the bull with my own hands. He's just a piece of stone. You're talking now. Ptah is talking, not some piece of stone.
Apis the bull requires the sacrifice.
No, I won't let you.
Apis the bull demands it.
No, no, no!
Gods! Gods!
Outside of Goshen is a desert. A horrible and dreadful wasteland full of snakes, lizards, and scorpions, extending over hundreds of miles. And across it one day moved the children of Israel, escaping from the greater horror of slavery. Staves in hand, their children riding on donkeys, their herds following them, they were leaving their villages and their homes behind to seek a new home of dignity and freedom. And when this great march began, we were among them.
Never again, Rebecca. Will these hands make another idol?
It is done with, my husband. Now we must only think of what lies ahead.
Never again will my eyes look upon another hated idol.
There will no longer be any need for that.
When early this morning we bypassed the Hakiros and the Pantheon of Gods, even though we were miles from it, I turned my eyes away.
Why are we stopping?
I don't know. Look, Moses is going to give us additional directions. Let us go closer to listen.
Children of Israel, we are turning back and encamping before Pi-Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea, before Baal-Zephon, the temple of the Egyptian gods.
Turning back before the temple of the infamous gods? What is happening? Have we traitors in our midst?
My husband, what were you able to find out?
The people are puzzled, bewildered.
What do they say?
Some believe that Moses does not desire our departure to have the appearance of a flight before the Egyptians. Therefore, in order not to arouse Pharaoh's suspicion, he gave the signal to turn back to Pi-Hahiroth. Afterwards, we will move ahead again.
That may be so.
Others are fearful that we are actually being returned to slavery. But our leaders assure us that by the word of God, we are free men and no longer slaves to Pharaoh. Moses himself offers no explanation other than...
Yes?
That each man will know the reason for the return when we are there.
What do you think, Manasseh?
I'm still furious. Why, Pi-Hahiroth? Why the temple of the animal gods? Isn't that what we are escaping from?
It is.
Now, after the killing of the child, I don't think I can return. I don't think I can look again at those hideous statues, the work of my own hands. No, I can't.
We must.
Why? No. I'll close my eyes.
No. My husband. For our children to come, for the future generations, we must no longer shut our eyes.
Please, Rebecca. Can't bear looking at...
A little longer. Soon I am sure we will receive the signal to depart.
Do you see? There. Apis, the bull god. I must smash it.
What will that do, my husband?
It will blot out from the face of the earth its hideous form.
Will it?
Of course it will. Only I can make such a bull god again.
Don't you know now why Moses had us return to the temple?
No. And I never will understand.
It is to have us face our most dangerous enemy.
These idols? They are merely made of stone. Even Moses says they have no power.
No, not the stone gods, but the strange gods within us, which permit man to do evil to his fellow men, which sanction man's inhumanity to man. Oh, no, no, Manasseh. We must not leave now. We must stay and look and learn about this most deadly foe.
My son. My son. Am I, too, guilty of your death? Did I also hold the knife?
Forgive me, O Lord! Forgive me.
Soon we moved on. It seemed to me that after Pi-Hahiroth, we carried a greater weight on our shoulders than before. To discover the truth of the inner heart is a bitterly painful experience. A part of man wanted to destroy all restraints, even his own decency and humanity. That was what we saw reflected in the hideous faces of the idols of Egypt. And the strange gods were not to leave us in our wanderings in the wilderness. Many of our people were to call out the names of these gods and plead for a return to Egypt. But now there was no turning back. Now we were in search of a great spiritual truth. We were in quest of the source of all goodness and justice. We were seeking within ourselves the holy sparks of the God of all, the God of our fathers.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now, we take great pleasure in presenting Dr. Abram Kanoff, P. pediatrician of Brooklyn, New York, chairman of the Jewish Museum Council, and president of the Jewish Historical Society, Dr. Kanoff.
The story we have just heard is about an artist. His business was to mold clay until it took such shapes as pleased his masters. His body was enslaved, and his mind did not feel free to question how these forms were used. The sculptor is himself malleable as clay. The same Anasa who molded an idol could have shaped a Torah ornament. The same craftsman who decorates a sword can carve a mezuzah. The talent which can write a marching song can compose a hymn. Manasseh, who sculpted a bull of the sword to impress its idolaters as a god, could have captured the grace of the beast in lines so pure that its beholders could have seen in it only one of God's creatures. After Manasseh had met Moses, he went back to the temple of the idol worshippers, where he saw the work of his hands. That which he had seen with slave eyes, he now saw with the eyes of a free man. That of which he had once been proud, he now found despicable. The man who had once manufactured idols now wanted to smash them. But he was restrained. Why was it permissible for his ancestor Abraham to smash his idols, while Manasseh could not? The idol resides in the heart of man. Just as worshiping an idol does not clothe it with divinity, so smashing does not eradicate it. Abraham was a free man, and he came to smashing idols after he had recognized the supreme being. Manasseh, a slave, enslaved by violence, thought only in terms of violence. Born in slavery, he needed confrontation and travail before he could wrest the idol from his mind. Only when there was no longer a need to smash it was there no longer a danger of worshiping it. The sculptor is himself malleable as clay. All the material comforts which had made Manasseh a master of idols, the desire for a loving wife, a secure home, a child to carry on his dreams, these all remained in him and were still the guidelines of his life. But after the inner struggle, these same things became instruments for good and a compass which would lead to virtue. On the battlefield of the soul, free will and personal responsibility had triumphed. The creative fingers won over the smashing hammer, and the sculptor who had molded idols now created beauty in honor of one God.
Thank you, Dr. Kanoff. Our Eternal Light drama today, Strange Gods, was written by Erwin Gonchak and was the first in this series of programs entitled Freedom and Responsibility. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Norman Rose as Moses, Alan Manson as Ptah, and Larry Robinson as Manasseh. Terry Keene was Rebecca. This is Bill McCord. Our program was directed by Daniel Sutter. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.